Welcome to another round of Drawing Board or Miro Board. Today, we talk brainstorms with UX designer Brian. Let's go. First question. You thought you'd see everyone's idea in the team brainstorm, but you've got a grand total of one. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board, right? Because in Miro, the team can add ideas now or later. And with Privacy Mode, we can keep them anonymous until they're good to share.
Correct. Next, you need the best way to explain your idea, but all you have is a few sticky notes. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board, because, you know, in Miro, I could record videos, add text, images, links, and digital sticky notes, of course. Present my thoughts the way I want.
Right again! Now, you're looking for a past idea you thought was just genius. Only you could find... Oh, there it is! Drawing Board or...
Miro! All our finished and unfinished work lives in one place.
And he's won.
Join over 60 million people getting ideas noticed in Miro Brainstorms. Get your first three boards for free at Miro.com. That's M-I-R-O.com.
Statements and opinions by guests of Mysterious Radio are not to be considered as endorsed by sponsors or affiliated networks. Any rebroadcast, reproduction, or other use of this podcast without the express written consent of Mysterious Radio is strictly prohibited.
You're listening to a Mysterious Radio exclusive. Get ready for a night filled with conspiracies, strange places, the paranormal, UFOs, legends, and myths from around the world. With your hosts, K-Town, on Mysterious Radio.
I'm your host, K-Town. Tonight is going to be a good one as we talk to author Barry Strohm about his book, Spirit Speaks, of Conspiracies and Mysteries. This book discusses how Barry and his wife have actually been able to communicate with famous people that have died under mysterious and or tragic circumstances. These spirits have shared with him some things that you might find shocking about their physical life and other mysteries in our world, such as events surrounding 9/11, alien secrecy, Malaysian Flight 370, among other things. Okay, let's get on with it. All right, I have with me tonight author Barry Strohm to discuss his book, Spirit Speak, of Conspiracies and Mysteries. I want to thank you for joining me tonight on Mysterious Radio, Barry.
It's an honor to be here. Thanks for having me.
It's my pleasure. And I have to admit that the book has a fascinating aspect to it concerning spirit communication with these incredible people from our history. I want to know what motivated you to write this book.
I guess just kind of being nosy, and it was like this natural progression of what we were doing. Spirit Speak is actually my fourth book, and all of them are based on us channeling information from spirits. And I started to realize that we could talk to very famous people. In my book Afterlife, What Really Happens on the Other Side, we had several sessions with Ulysses Grant, and he told us some stuff, and actually, he's the one that hinted about what was taking place at the Lincoln assassination. So he aroused my curiosity. So we started trying to talk to some of these spirits, and we found out that they more than wanted to tell their stories. There are so many conspiracies. History is so wrong in so many places that it's just incredible. And they were actually quite willing to come forward. It took about a year and a half of board channeling to get their messages. For the listeners that don't know what we do, we use a very special channeling board. It's not a Ouija. The board we use is actually designed by the spirit guides themselves. We asked them how they wanted it, the way they wanted it set up, and they gave us the instructions. It consists of letters and numbers in a circle, a couple other commands, and where we differ is we have a glass surface on it. And our slider is actually another piece of glass that we use. And my wife and I will get on this thing, and it flies around and spells out the messages. And we take video and audio of every session that we do. So whenever you see a word appearing in one of my books, I can go back into my files and pull up the session where we were given these messages to prove that we're not making this stuff up. You can go onto my one of my websites called Spirit Era. you go. I have some pages on my website that you can go into and see some of this information. And it's a crazy world. I mean, until I was 60 years old, I never even believed in ghosts. And now I find we've channeled with them for over 600 hours. And the information that we've gotten just gets more and more amazing every day. So we're living a miracle and loving it. And the conspiracy book, I thought, was really different. And we tackled 27 different conspiracies in it. Talked to Jack Kennedy. He told us who shot him. Did the Lincoln conspiracy and ran into some amazing stuff that we never expected. Went as far back in conspiracies as King Richard III. And it's been a crazy world so far for us.
I tell you what, it's very fascinating to say the least.
I mean, I'm at the store, and our store is incredibly haunted, so it's not uncommon to have the ghosts come in and do something to me while I'm doing a radio show. but I got this little creak in my chair back here.
Okay, so that's what it is. Okay, all right. So you said that you and your wife do this together?
Yes, she and I. The spirits read our energy and give us the messages and spell them out. And they spell it out really fast. It's kind of amazing. The website that I have is spiritspredict.com. And if anybody's interested in learning how we do it, there's a page called Board Channeling. And we actually have a couple YouTube links up where you can watch sessions where we were channeling to see how fast these messages come in.
So how long does it take to complete a session?
We usually do it about an hour and a half to 2 hours. A two-hour session will generate somewhere around 5 typewritten pages of transcript for us.
Okay. All right. Now, you've also conducted research around the Gettysburg area as well, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I was born in Hershey, which is fairly close to Gettysburg, Pennsylvania. Always been drawn to the battlefield. And when I started, my first interest in ghosts was actually going out on the battlefield and taking pictures and photographs. And first book that I published was called Haunting and History of the Battle of Gettysburg, and I put about 200 ghost pictures in that book, all of which that I took myself. Battlefield is an amazingly spiritual place. And it's just, and anyone that goes out there, whether you believe in spirit world or not, you will be amazed at this place. It's wonderful.
Now, have you investigated any hauntings in your life?
Yeah, when I first got involved in this whole thing, I kind of joined a paranormal group. And the first place we came was my own building here, Golden Lane Antique Gallery. It's got about 30,000 square foot of floor space. And as I say, it is just unbelievably haunted. When I'm in this building, I don't have to go hunting for them. They come to me. I can get a ghost box out, sit here in my office, and talk to them anytime I want to. I've done some hauntings and some investigations, but I've never been anywhere to compare with my own place here.
Okay, I don't see how you get any work done.
Some days it's a little strange here, to say the least. They lock the doors, turn off the lights, play tricks on us. 2 weeks ago, I locked the place up, turned all the lights off, looked out the window about 8:30, and they turned the lights back on in here and had to go back in and turn them on, turn the lights back off. They do all kinds of stuff.
Now, Barry, who's haunting your building? I mean, is it someone that used to work there? Someone died in the building? Who's haunting that place?
We got hundreds of them. I have a portal downstairs. And they actually come in through the portal. I watch them every night on my security cameras. Well, we have actually channeled. This was an old shoe factory, dates back to 1877. Mm-hmm. And we have actually channeled with 8 people that worked here, 8 shoemakers that they still come back and do their little reunions and get together. I've got 3 children that are here, and simply they died in the neighborhood. Used to play in the neighborhood, and they just like being in the store because we're good to them here. my wife has got a prior life brother that's with her all the time. So I can basically talk to Bert anytime I want to here. And it's just, it's a crazy place. We had a group come in. Now, I don't let people come in and investigate, because you don't have to investigate. When you can talk to them whenever you want, that's not an investigation. So we treat them like other humans, and they treat us the same, like we're humans or we're spirits, and everybody gets along here. But I did a guy's radio show up in Philadelphia, and they had a group, and I let them come in here a couple of weeks ago. And he said that he's done over 500 investigations and has never seen activity like this.
Oh, really?
Oh, it was just everything. When they came, it was just continuous. We were talking to them. They were lighting the meters up. You could see them on the cameras. It was just 2 hours of continuous activity. Now, they were quite impressed. They realized I wasn't kidding them. It really is what I say it is here.
Can you give us like a little rundown on how you actually use the board to channel the spirits? Are you asking for them by name? How are you bringing them forth for communication?
Well, we'll do different things. If I'm doing a work session, for instance, I go in and I have a notebook of questions made up. Right now, I'm writing a book on the life of Jesus, and they're coming in and telling me what his life really was like. Not necessarily what's written in the Bible about his life, but the way he lived it. And we've had three guides that have been coming in and handling this. We've had St. Augustine coming through for us. We had St. Peter come in and give us information, and we have St. Paul coming in. So depending on the type of information I'll be asking right now, they will select who knows the most about that information. So it's not uncommon. We get one or two different guides come in. I've done sessions already where they tell me I've had 12 different guides come in to give me information. They will actually know what my questions are. And what I will do the night before we do a session, I will pray to them and I will ask them and explain to them what I really want to do. One night I had prayed for two different things, two different subject areas. I started the channeling session and the guide comes in and I said to him, I said, are you going to do this? And the answer was, no, we're going to do the other thing you ask about. So they hear every word, and they often will actually, sometimes they even help me write the questions. So they know exactly what's going on. We have an incredible relationship with the spirits on the other side. And since we've been writing about the life of Jesus, we have had him come through for us three times. And we had the Blessed Mother come in for us once. So we've had some pretty heavy people coming through on our little channeling board.
That's amazing, actually. So these spirit guides, are they guides for people that have passed away?
Spirit guides can be people. They can be the souls of people that have had incarnate lives and decide to help others. They're elevated souls. There's seven realms on the other side. And as you come back and forth through your different reincarnations, your soul gets experience and you can advance into these different levels. And once you reach higher levels, then your soul can become a guide, or you don't have to. But they have this group of spirits over there that help others. And every individual has spirit guides. You just have to know how to contact them, how to listen to them. You've got them all your life. You have them from the time of inception until you die. It's real. I never understood it totally. But, my fifth book's at the publisher based on information from them, and it's just a phenomenal universe we live in.
Have you ever contacted your spirit guide?
Oh, yeah, all the time. Basically, we have a master that comes in. His name is Raz, R-A-Z, and we will generally start our session off by asking for our master. And then he will come in, and then he just simply turns it over to one of the experts that have come in to answer our questions. If we're trying to reach an individual, I will pray a couple nights before and warn them that we would like to speak with this spirit. And generally they have it arranged. I'll ask for them and they'll step forward and come through and we can ask them the questions. When we do sessions for private people on the outside, I will tell them to pray and ask for the spirit that they want to talk to, their family member. And then we generally can bring their guides in and we ask for the presence. The presence comes in, and we just step back and answer the questions. We let the individual ask the questions. The spirit will spell out the answers, and we just simply are in the middle, and we're just acting as the conduit between the spirit and the individual.
Oh, I see. Okay. All right. So do you do those sessions there at your shop?
Well, here comes the amazing part. We can do them over Skype. Oh. I have Skyped with individuals as far away as South Africa, over 8,000 miles, and I have been able to bring in his guide, and we answered questions for him, personal questions that we had absolutely no idea from. I mean, believe me, I did not know this guy in South Africa. We have another client in Ireland that we channeled with a couple times, and we can bring his guide in, answer his questions, and do full sessions for him. When we first learned this, we were taught channeling by people in Salt Lake City. So I'd be here in Pennsylvania, and they would have the board out in Salt Lake, and we'd be on Skype, and I would ask the questions, and the answers would come on the board. They would give me the answers out there, because I wanted to make sure that we were not influencing the answers.
Okay.
So believe me, when I ask questions to them and they know nothing about it out in Salt Lake, I'm not influencing the answers on that board. And they repeatedly told me what was taking place back here. Answered very specific questions. Would tell me about ghost interactions that I was having that they had no clue was taking place. So it's... distance seems to have make no difference in what we do.
Now, do you mind telling us some do's and definite don'ts when using a channeling board?
Well, one of the definite don'ts is you absolutely never, ever ask for evil. You always have to start with prayer. And if you do not have a strong belief in God, which is your protection, then stay away from it. And really, paranormal people don't totally understand what takes place. When you're using a ghost box where you talk to them, you're opening a channel with that spirit. And you need to control that spirit just the same as you do when we use a channeling board. As I say, we ask our guides to protect us. And we have actually had them shut sessions off. We've had people try to come through that weren't supposed to come through. And all of a sudden, all the activity just stops and the glass won't move anymore. And we know that's the end of it. We thank them, say a little prayer, and away we go.
Okay.
But the asking for evil thing is the absolute most important thing. And you have to start it. And you got to understand that the protections are all coming from your personal faith. If you're an atheist and don't believe in God, you don't want to play with the board because you will not have the protections and control that we have when we do it.
Welcome to another round of Drawing Board or Miro Board. Today, we talk brainstorms with UX designer Brian. Let's go. First question. You thought you'd see everyone's idea in the team brainstorm, but you've got a grand total of one. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board, right? Because in Miro, the team can add ideas now or later. And with privacy mode, we can keep them anonymous until they're good to share.
Correct. Next, you need the best way to explain your idea, but all you have is a few sticky notes. Drawing board or Miro board?
Drawing board, because, you know, in Miro, I could record videos, add text, images, links, and digital sticky notes, of course, present my thoughts the way I want.
Right again! Now, you're looking for a past idea you thought was just genius. Only you could find... oh, there it is! Drawing board or...
Miro! All our finished and unfinished work lives in one place.
And he's won.
Join over 60 million people getting ideas noticed in Miro Brainstorms. Get your first three boards for free at Miro.com. That's Miro.com.
Okay, I see. It makes sense now. Have you ever contacted a negative entity of some type?
We've had them try to come through for us, but we've always shut them right down. We're very well protected. I mean, it's really kind of amazing how it all works out. But the guides on the other side will just flag it and stop it.
Okay. Let's get into some things about your book here. You picked some very interesting people to include in this book. And I want to discuss your channeling session with an alien guide first, if you don't mind.
Okay.
And your very good question. Your very, very good question about Bigfoot that some people say, yes, it does exist. And some are dead set that it doesn't. And many like myself, you know, kind of straddle the fence on this. Can you tell me about your channeling session concerning Bigfoot?
Okay, now, they tell us that Bigfoot definitely exists, that they're a type of ape figure. They're very big, they're very strong, and they're very afraid of humans. And the reason that we never see them is because they have mastered another dimension. And they actually have the ability to live in that other dimension that we cannot see. And it's like they have the doorway through this dimension. And they will come over into our dimensions, our three dimensions that we're aware of. And when they see a human, they just pop back through that door and basically become invisible. Aliens can do the same thing. And that's one of the big reasons why we don't see aliens around. But they tell us that Bigfoot is absolutely real. There are more of them than we think there are. And if one gets hurt, they drag them back through that dimension wall. And that's why we never see any bodies or anything.
I've actually heard a remote viewer say the same thing, that they are popping in and out of dimensions.
Yeah, no, they're very clear about it. We've been told several times because I didn't think they existed. And I was kind of surprised the first time I asked the question. Then I made up a lot more detailed questions about it, and they came right back and filled in the details. I have no doubts that it exists, and that's why I put it in the book.
Now, when you say you channeled an alien guide, is this the spirit of an alien that is no longer living, or what?
That is correct. Now, this is going to put everybody's hair on fire, but the key to all this ability that we have in channeling aliens is the fact that aliens have the same souls as humans, and aliens go to the same heaven that we do. And even more strange is your human souls have probably already been aliens or living on other planets in the past. I want you to think about something. The human soul is an energy, okay? And it comes and it goes, and it lives multiple lifetimes. And to the guides on the other side, death is the start of another cycle. To humans, we feel death is the end. But to the spirit world, your soul energy goes to the other side and you begin another reincarnation process. And you have free will. And if you decide, you can come back and live another lifetime. And it's all as part of a learning process. Now, your soul energy has been around for an awful long time. Okay? It just did not start when humans came on this earth. Humans have been here, 200,000 years, 250,000 years. Where do you think your soul energy was before humans came onto this earth? Well, the answer is your souls were on other planets. When I channel them, they tell me some of my histories. I channel a soul named Mu. M-O-U. Mm-hmm. And he is from a planet on the far reaches of the Milky Way. And he is a blue alien, stands about 9.5 feet. And he died in 1987 at the ripe old age of 942 of our years. So they're very advanced, and they have this very long life expectancy. And they will terminate around 950 years. Now, Mu tells me there was a time that I was actually his brother on that planet. And he tells me 10,000 years ago that he lifed on our planet. So he was very familiar because he was here at one time. When he was an alien, he actually had made two trips to Earth and had observed abductions. And he told me a lot about what appears in the alien book. And right now, my fifth book is at the publisher, and it's a very advanced edition of about aliens. And it crosses over into spirituality because Mu informed me that on his planet, they worship the same God that we do. And that our God is the God of the entire Milky Way galaxy. And that each galaxy will have a separate god. I know that's going to put some people's hair on fire. On his planet, the Son of God came to them 4,000 years ago, the same way that Jesus came to us on this planet. And they totally believe in God. They worship the same God. and they actually can go to the same heaven we do, and that's why I have the ability to channel with them. And he has actually brought other spirits along. One night he brought spirits from another galaxy in, and he described them, and let me tell you, it's not like anything you can conceive of. You know, I asked him, I said, why would the human spirit want to reincarnate on another planet? Mm-hmm. And he said, because your soul has got to learn to advance. And when you go to another planet, you experience emotions that you've never felt. You've seen things that you've never seen. And you, everything is just so totally different that it's part of the total learning experience that your soul is required to go through. But no, but ask yourself where your soul was before humans were here.
That's a very good question.
Uh-huh. No, I can tell you the answer. That's, you were on other planets.
Now,
that one made you, yeah, that one made you stutter a little bit, didn't it?
It did. Oh, wow. I wasn't expecting that. Okay.
That's why I said it.
Yeah. Well, you know what? You can only say what you've been told. I mean, even if it upsets some people. So, now let's talk about.
Not only told, but what I write in the books. I mean, this is a matter of record.
Right, right. Very good. Now, when you had this, when you got this information about Jimmy Hoffa, were you actually channeling Jimmy?
No. He was not available. I think he's already come back and reincarnated. And I'm sorry that motorcycle just went by outside my window.
It's fine. It's fine. That's fine. Could you tell me, like, what happened to him? Did you find out what? Well, let me put it like this. If a soul has reincarnated, can you still find out what happened to them?
Well, you can find out what happened to them, but the guides have to give you the message.
Okay.
In a lot of the chapters, I was lucky enough to just simply ask the spirit that lived it. Like Butch Cassidy, for instance. We had a nice conversation with Butch. Really nice guy. I was very impressed with Butch Cassidy.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
What happened to him?
Well, not what you think happened to him.
Okay.
And, you know, as the movie says, he died in Bolivia.
Right.
Well, he didn't. Butch Cassidy was actually one of the most intelligent robbers of all time. He would plan these things out, and he would, I mean, this guy was quite brilliant. And he knew that the heat was on. They finally, in 1901, they robbed the Great Northern Railroad of $60,000. Well, today, the equivalent, that was $1.7 million. And that really got the railroad upset. So that's when they hired the Pinkertons. So he and Sundance Kid knew that they had to get out of Dodge. So they went down to Argentina, bought a big cattle ranch down there, and thought they were going to be safe. Well, unfortunately, they couldn't get over the habit of robbing trains. So they started doing the same thing they were doing in Argentina. And the Pinkertons got word of what they were doing and started to try and they started to go down to Argentina looking for them. And Butch and Sundance found out that they had a problem. So they sell this ranch, got a lot of money, and they head up to Bolivia. Well, the story is that they robbed a mine in Bolivia. Well, they didn't. They paid off all the locals and they made this story up. And actually, the Pinkertons never believed the story because they never took him off the wanted list until a couple of years ago. He throws everybody off, and they wind up coming back to the United States. Now, Butch Cassidy was actually from the state of Utah, and his name was Leroy Parker. And when I started channeling with the guy, I said, "Now, do you want me to call you Butch?" And he came back and said, "No, please call me Leroy." So that was his name. Butch was an alias. But he actually dies in 1936 as a businessman in the state of Washington. And his sister and family, they knew he was back, but they kept this as a secret. You know, he came back, had a successful business, and nobody ever caught on. It was really Butch Cassidy. Yeah, now, cool story.
Yeah, did that shock you?
No, I suspected this. I had done some research on the internet, and I had read that there were statements that his sister had made later in life after he died, you know, and all this. So I kind of suspected what was coming, But no, Leroy's quite proud of his story. He was happy to tell it.
All right. I'm talking to author Barry Strome, and we are discussing his book, Spirit Speak, of Conspiracies and Mysteries. His book is available on Amazon and other fine book retailers. And we have more for you when we return right after this. Okay, we are back. And now, Barry, let's talk about another intriguing mystery that you wrote about in your book. And that's the doomed flight of MH370 that seemed to literally disappear into thin air since only pieces of it have been found. Can you tell us what information you gathered about the flight during your channeling session?
Well, this was one that I actually had trouble believing what they were telling me. When we started out with it, they were telling us that it was terrorists took over the flight. They took it up and basically killed all the people. And they actually said that they took the plane to an island about 500 miles off of Vietnam. And that all checked. Because I went in, looked at the maps, and I thought, yeah, you know, this could really be quite possible. Apparently, what they were going to do was take the plane up to Pakistan or one of the it was a terrorist thing, and they were going to use it as a weapon. So now here's where the story gets, it's really kind of out there. Mu told us that when they tried to transport the plane, they had a problem with running into, that they actually had an accident with an alien vehicle, and that the aliens actually had to take over the airplane. And after the accident, they arranged to hide the ship deep in the ocean where nobody would ever find it. And he said what they would do is they would take parts of the airplane and they would actually use it as bait in different areas. And the pieces of the airplane would actually wash up, but it was no indication. And he said right away to me that he said the whole area where they were searching is absolutely not where the airplane is. And he said, aliens are good. When they make a mistake, they know how to cover it up. That was the exact quote. And I said, well, okay, where'd they put the plane? And he said, I'm not going to tell you that. He gave me a wise-ass answer. It was something like 100 miles north of Santa Claus. But there was no way he was ever going to tell me where this thing was hidden. But as we've seen, pieces of that airplane have washed up on some of the islands over near India. And so far, I can't argue with him. They haven't found it. He said they would... He said there was a possibility that sometime in the future it would be located, but only as our technologies got better in deep water exploration. But I found that part of it very hard to believe. But when they tell me something, I print it, and I think I used a bit of a disclaimer in this portion of the book. But that's what he tells me happened. And so far, history is proving it. They haven't found anything. Now they're talking about something, find this thing in somewhere in the deep ocean. They may have found something. But everything he's told me has come true. They did find pieces of it, and it never indicated. Once they found those pieces, they should have been able to track down, knowing the ocean currents and everything, where it came from. Mm-hmm. And they didn't. So I think, you know, I'm more and more a believer as time goes on here. But he told me a very strange story about that one. That was the most difficult one to believe in the whole book. But I put it in because he told me.
Well, trust me, on this show, we've heard a lot about secret space programs, and you just wouldn't believe it. So nothing can shock us probably at this point. Now, I would love to hear your thoughts about anything that you've learned on a reincarnation, about how long that takes, or is that totally up to us, or why have some spirits reincarnate and some haven't? Can you give us some insight on that?
Reincarnation is absolutely real. We all carry a book of life in our heads, and the spirits have you have this little energy that comes out, and the spirit guides have the ability to actually read this energy level. And everything's so different over there, it's hard to understand. But that is why we can go in and investigate our prior lives. You have, what Muis told me was that if you are living, you have lived before. You've had prior lives. Now, not only one or two, but literally thousands of prior lives. Because your soul has been around long, probably before Earth was here. And Earth is here, what, like 12 billion years now or something like that? So the soul energy has been around. It's been on all these multiple planets. And the whole idea of reincarnation is that your soul has got to learn to advance. The desire is that your soul becomes more like God's. You learn how to handle different situations. For instance, I asked him one time, what happens to a non-believer? Does it go to the lower level over there? Or what happens to them? And the answer was no. You will actually have to come back and live the life of a non-believer so that you know the experience, so that you understand how the mind of a non-believer works. And that is all part of your learning experience. There is no hell. There's a lower realm of nothingness, but there's not a place of fire and brimstone and this guy in a red suit running around. Now, reincarnation is very real for me because obviously I have access to this information through my channeling, and we know an awful lot about our prior lives. For instance, Connie and I have been together 6 or 7 lifetimes. And in this lifetime, we're together now going on 56 years.
Welcome to another round of Drawing Board or Miro Board. Today, we discuss technical diagramming with systems architect Maya. Let's go. First question. You've spent 10 hours slogging over a sequence diagram that should have taken 5. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board. And if I'm being honest, Miro would probably cut that time down by half. You know, with its AI tools and ready-to-go templates.
Next, your diagrams become so bulky, it's more complex than the solar system. But all it takes is a few clicks and...
it's Miro. I've used those technical shape packs way too many times, and stuff is just digestible on its infinite online canvas.
Now, the final question. Everyone's brought in, but you have to make all these tasks all the way over in Jira. But wait, it's done. Is it...
Miro, easy with its two-way Jira sync. Easy to plot dependencies. Everyone always knows what's up.
And she's done it.
Join over 60 million people creating technical diagrams without workflow glitches. Get your first 3 boards for free at Miro.com. That's Miro.com.
And it was all preordained that we were going to do this. And when we're on the other side, they tell us that Connie and I are actually guides. And because of the advancements that we've had in prior lives, we help others when we're on the other side. And now when we're on this side, this is why we're being given this information. And this is part of why we do what we do at this stage. And this was all preordained when we came in. And they tell us that she and I are absolutely on our karma path at this point. And this was what we agreed to, and this is what we're doing, and this is why they're helping us out with everything. Now, I have traced my prior life. I was born, you know, like 30 miles from Gettysburg. When I was a kid, all that I ever wanted to do was go over to the battlefield on the weekends. My parents took me over. When Connie and I started to date, my first date with her, we actually went to the battlefield, believe it or not. See, I really knew how to party in those days, too. So I've always been drawn over there. So I reached the point that I started channeling with some of these local spirits, and I started actually talking to people that told me that I fought at Gettysburg. And they gave me the historical data, and I know exactly where I fought. I know what units I was there. I know my rank. And I was a Confederate that fought the 2nd and 3rd day at Gettysburg. Now, how can I prove that? Well, when I was doing the first book, it was before I realized all this information. Mm-hmm. I was out on the battlefield photographing at night by myself. And that's how I did this for over 2 years. So I was this one part of the battlefield, which turned out to be where I fought. I always got great pictures and I could go down and there was activity. And there's this wooded path that went down to this creek, and the creek was where they would have taken the wounded and the dying. And that was, you know, there's always activity there for me. So I start down this trail, and all of a sudden I hear this voice that says, don't go. And I start to feel fear, and I don't feel fear out there. And I turn around, went about 50 feet, and a big tree falls right on the trail where I would have been. And I would have been out there at night under that tree, except for that voice and the feelings that they gave me. So I came, I thought, well, boy, man, my guardian angel's pretty busy. So we come back a couple nights later, I'm channeling, and one of my friends, turns out, was, he and I were together over there. So I asked him, I said, did you save my life the other night when I was out there? And his answer was, no, it was the fellows. It was the souls of the spirits that I fought with that were in the same place and warned me and saved my life that night on the battlefield. So that gave me the idea that I can actually go out and communicate with these spirits. So I took the ghost box out, and I actually stood there and I had a conversation on the ghost box with the spirits of the soldiers that I fought with in 1863 during the battle. And I've taken other people out. They've heard the conversations. I mean, I can do this every time I go out. When I had this group a couple of weeks ago, I took them out. I went to the spot and I asked for them. And I said, do you recognize me? Yes. What was my rank? Captain. And we had this whole conversation and all these guys heard it. And I'm out there talking with the spirits that died that I fought with at the time. So that's pretty good. Then I had another prior life that led me to the Battle of Little Bighorn. And the information they gave me, I could go in and find out that I was actually a Native American scout. And Custer had 33 scouts present with him at the battle. And there were only like six of the scouts were killed. And I was apparently a 15-year-old Lakota Sioux that took part in a raiding party to get the Indians' horses and run them off. So I had a physical, and I had been called out. You know, I always felt something about that battlefield as well. I asked him after I tied this whole thing together, made a couple trips out there. I asked him on the channeling board, I said, what was my Native American name out there? And they told me it was Yellow Cloud, but then they said the soldiers called you Billy. So you can go in and look at the list of the Native Americans out there, and you will see that there was a young Lakota translator named Billy Cross. So they said that Cross was my last name out there as well. So I have been able to physically prove two lifetimes. Now, when I channeled with George Custer, I asked him, I said, why are you coming through to tell me your story? And his answer was, son, I chose you. That went over for a while. Mm-hmm. And then next session with him, I said, okay, you got to tell me why you chose me. And he said, because we've been together in several lifetimes. I said, when? He said, you and I were brothers. In the 4th century, you and I fought in the Persian army together as brothers. And he said, then there was another lifetime where I was your uncle.
Well, you just had a lot of lifetimes of fighting.
Oh, yeah. And it gets better and better.
My goodness, Barry.
Oh, yeah. That's the reincarnation. Amazing. It's so real. I mean, I believe
in it, honestly.
Oh, there's no doubt. There's no doubt. I mean, they're advancing my information now and stuff that I don't want to talk about quite yet. But right. It's phenomenal just what my soul has been through And it helps explain to me why all this is taking place.
Right. It does to me. Now, I do have to ask you about this. Let's talk about another mystery that's in your book, and it's an infamous one concerning the Bermuda Triangle. Now, again, it's one of those areas in the world where we know something very strange is going on. And science is trying to really prove that in the case of ships, it may be what they call rogue waves. Now, I don't know if I believe that or not, but for airplanes, they have no idea what's causing them to completely vanish, especially with the disappearance of Flight 19 being the most infamous one of those, where five Avenger torpedo bombers disappeared on December 5th, 1945. Now, what information were you given about the disappearances in that part of the world?
Well, it's produced, there's a lot of natural phenomena there because there are multiple ley lines or energy lines that come together and intersect. Now, keep in mind, there are other areas. Bermuda gets a lot of attention, but there is a Dragon's Triangle near Japan. There's another triangle up near Alaska where they have many, many mysterious losses as well. And these ley lines come together and it forms energy vortexes. Now, let me back up a minute, and I'm going to tell you a story that ties into this. And this is one of the most verified examples of time travel that has ever taken place. A fellow by the name of Bruce Gernon was a pilot in 1970, and he was flying from Andros to West Palm Beach in a beach craft. Now, a 1970 beach craft had a top speed of around 200 miles per hour.
Okay.
And he had two other people with him. So he's headed for West Palm. He comes over Bimini and he starts to look and he sees these bizarre, strange clouds in front of him. And he goes and he sees this opening in the clouds. So he decides he's going to shoot through this hole and avoid these storms. So he goes into this, and they got him on radar at Bimini. He goes into this cloud, goes through this hole, and he experiences this bizarre white fog. And he comes out of this fog, and he looks down, and he's over Miami Beach, and they pick him up on the Miami radar. Now, in order for him to have flown from Bimini to Miami in that short period of time, that beach craft had to go over 2,000 miles per hour. In addition, the guy only used 29 gallons of gas, where it usually requires 80 to fly that distance.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what he did is he flew into a naturally occurring wormhole. And when you get into these wormholes, they shoot you off. Now, he was very lucky that this thing was headed back to land. But in the case of Flight 19, where there were five torpedo bombers and crews together, they flew into a wormhole and it shot them out over the ocean. And they ran out of gas and crashed out there. So they actually, time travel is very possible, and it actually does happen. And some of these disappearances is these vehicles get caught into these wormholes and they shoot them off. And they can't get out of them when they're in them. And they find out instead of going 50 miles, they're going 500. And you know, in those days, it also destroyed all they had were compasses and rudimentary ability to negotiate where they were. So once they got out there, they were all screwed up. Another thing that happens when you get into these energy vortexes, it messes with the equipment. So sometimes these vortexes can take the form of like whirlpools in the ocean. And that's what happens with some of these ships that disappear. They get caught into these energy vortexes because it can take all kinds of different forms. So the energy activity is very, very real in these areas. And you got to respect it.
I agree, Barry. It's really frightening. I mean, when I go on cruises, I think about it.
Yeah, really?
I'm serious.
We were out last year and I thought about it myself.
I'm serious.
Like, what the hell am I doing out here?
You know, I know I've seen all these, you know, programs about the triangle, but still I'm on a cruise ship, so I'm still nervous about it. Now, I want to know where you got the information about Nazi technology and what made you ask about that?
Well, I started going through the mysteries and Moo actually thought that this was something that I needed to discuss. He gave me this topic. The Nazis, you know, they were not that advanced coming in the early 30s. Their rockets were going very short distances. They were having total problems. Wernher von Braun was the head of their system over there in the research. Now, all of a sudden, in about 3 years, they're firing these damn things over into England with bombs on them. So it was almost a miraculous advance took place in a very short period of time, because you just can't put that technology together that fast. Well, apparently in 1938, there was a spaceship crashed in Bavaria, and it had a bunch of aliens on it. They had a malfunction, and it was a soft landing, and none of them were killed. And the aliens actually wound up helping the Nazis to get this information. At the time, they misread the intentions of Hitler. They didn't realize that he was going to use this thing for evil. But they started to realize what went on, and they came back and rescued the aliens, and they took off. But the Nazis actually had this information. So after the war, we brought a lot of the Nazis over into the United States, von Braun being one of them. They called it Operation Paperclip because they distorted all the information about these guys that they could be accepted back over here. Von Braun was actually a member of the SS. He should have been tried. Instead, he becomes a hero and a millionaire. But interestingly, they actually took von Braun for a couple rides in their ships, and he went into outer space. And once he did this and came back, the SS actually arrested him because he was spending most of his research time on space travel and not on military rocketry. So he was actually arrested by the SS because of his interest in outer space. But a lot of what the technology that came over here that we wound up using in our programs was given to the Nazis by aliens in this crashed vehicle.
Do you know what race of aliens actually contacted the Nazis?
No, they were shapeshifters.
There's
about four different kinds of variations of shapeshifters. The alien presence is so much greater than anybody gives it credit for. Now, keep in mind that my new book is about aliens and universal reincarnation and universal God, but it really goes into heavy detail about a lot of areas. We talk about different types of space vehicles in this that they gave me the information on. And there are over 200 types of space vehicles. Believe it or not, the vehicles range in size from the size of a baseball to one the size of the United States.
Oh, my.
Yes. And that is the main vehicle that they use for refueling. You hear about motherships.
Mm-hmm.
They are babies compared to the base ship. I mean, in my book, I go through and they actually tell me the size of a mothership. They tell me the size of the smaller vehicles, how many people are on it. But I asked Moo, I said, okay, you're telling me that there's a thing out there the size of the United States that we don't see. I said, where is it? He said, well, a couple of years ago when we were doing this, they were hiding it behind Saturn where we couldn't see it. Whether they're still there or not, I don't know. They have the capability of making something that large invisible, believe it or not. They got all these different sites. So I say to him, I ask the question, Moo, how many different types of aliens would there be on that big vehicle? And his answer was somewhere around 250 different types. Think about that. I mean, you hear about the Greys and the Palladians and all the others.
Right.
But there are hundreds of them out there that we have never even heard about. And they all cooperate, and they mean us no harm. They operate under an agreement with the world governments. Moo told me that aliens have been on this planet since the time of the dinosaurs. So they've had visitors here for over 60 million years. And these cultures are so advanced, if they meant us harm, we would be harmed. We would be gone. So it's pointless to worry about them harming us. because they with their technologies, they're here to help. In my new book, I go through and I point out a lot of the areas where they have helped us with technological. I already have one alien book out there in print. It's called Aliens Among Us and Past and Present. And it's available on Amazon, and it lays the foundation for this new book. And I just kind of take the information we got in the first book and expand it. So if anybody's interested in reading about aliens, that the first book that I have out there is a good foundation for them. And about 6 to 8 months, we'll have a new one out, and you'll be utterly shocked with some of the stuff in this new book.
Oh, I can't wait to get it.
Yeah, you know, it's there's some wild shit in there, is all I can tell you.
Oh, wow. Barry, can you tell them about your website as well before we go?
Okay, now my website, I've got multiple websites. The main one is spiritspredict.com, simply spiritspredict.com. I have another one that deals with the spiritual messages we get from the saints. That is called messagesofheaven.com. Good way to get in touch with me. Send me a friend request on Facebook. It's under my name, and I'm not hiding from anybody. And we just started a new group called Words of God Then and Now. And in that group, I'm starting to go through and give some of the information that we have been given about the true life of Jesus and some of the information that we've got in our channeling sessions from him. Very interesting group. We've only had it for 2 weeks, and we've got over 600 people in it already. So if you'd like to join that and find out what they're telling me about the life of Jesus, do it. And one little clue I'm going to tell you is they are absolutely pushing the fact that Jesus was a man. Whenever you read any of the verses in the Bible, everything is very exaggerated because it's an interpretation of what people thought Jesus should have been. They took these stories and they just exaggerated and exaggerated it. And when you hear the truth, it's pretty amazing. The resurrection and everything actually took place and happened. But now I'll just give you one little clue. The Bible is very, very difficult to read because they do all the everything is written in parables, and they say this is how Jesus taught. Well, that's not how he taught. He talked in very straight language because his common sense, the common people would have been incapable. They were uneducated, and they couldn't have figured out all these parables. So he would have lost them. So when you read these difficult parables, that is not Jesus the way he taught. He taught in a very straight manner, and the messages that he gives us are very straightforward and very inspirational. So if you have an interest in hearing what we're up to now, I would suggest you try to get into our group, Words of God, Then and Now on Facebook.
All right. That's all the time we have for tonight. Barry, I want to thank you very much for stopping by Mysterious Radio.
Oh, it was fun. Thank you.
All right, I want to thank Barry for joining me again. I want to thank my producer tonight, Kim, and the Mysterious Radio team. I am your host, K-Town, and I will see you next time on Mysterious Radio.
Like the show? Get more Mysterious Radio on our website. And don't forget to visit our Twitter and Facebook page.
Welcome to another round of Boardroom or Miro Board. Today we talk retrospectives with Agile Coach Maria. Let's go. First question. You've spent 2 hours in a team retro, but the only input you've heard is Dave's. Boardroom or Miro Board?
Boardroom. In Miro, Dave can't hog the space because everyone can add thoughts anonymously, online, at the same time.
Correct. Next. You need the team to act on feedback fast, so you turn all those retro notes into Jira tasks instantly.
Miro all the way. And I can assign those tasks to teammates.
You're nailing this. Now, you see hundreds of sticky notes from the retro. A real mess. But you organize them into 5 themes in just seconds.
Miro, I basically get back an entire hour when I use its AI tools for clustering.
And she's done it.
Join over 60 million people running actually enjoyable and actionable retros in Miro. Get your first 3 boards free at Miro.com. That's Miro.com.